Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled Lessons Learned from a Lifetime Plumbing and Heating Contractor. Tom, it's not often we have a presenter that we have both known for a number of years and totally respect. Bill Rozga is that person. He has literally spent his entire life as a plumbing and heating contractor, and his story is a real eye-opener.
It sure is, Bill. I mean, in addition to being a long-term client, a professional contractor, he's been a close personal friend for both of us for a number of years. As he used to say when introducing the wide world of sports, Bill has been through the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. He has pressed through personal and business tragedy, trusted in the Lord, and moved forward to build an amazing company, which he sold to his general manager in 2018. Bill's story will truly encourage anyone who's in business.
Oh yeah, Bill Rozga has over 40 years of experience in the plumbing and heating industry. Bill followed his early interest in plumbing by attending the Southeast Wisconsin Trade School in Milwaukee. At age 24, he became the youngest master plumber on record. In 1981, he founded Rozga Plumbing Corporation, serving Southeast Wisconsin for over 35 years. After retiring in 2018, Bill joined Grandy & Associates in 2020 to share his knowledge of the plumbing industry. And now, with lessons learned from a lifetime plumbing and heating contractor, here is Bill Rozga with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation. Hey, all, it's good to have you here today. It is a thrill for me to be able to have a conversation with a dear friend. Bill Rozga, it's great to have you as part of Prophet University today.
Bill, I am privileged and honored to be here. I mean, we've got two Bills here of a kindred spirit, technicians in our own right, and yet we have a great passion about what we do.
And it's one of those struggles, right? That's what Prophet University is all about, and so many companies are dealing with that, right? Technical people running a company.
For sure.
Some of those differences that are there.
And the thing is that when you've got technical people, you've got people that are very much geared into the way they think something should be done. And that's where some of the challenges come in.
That's absolutely right. There's no question about it. Well, yeah, it's great to have you here as part of the program. And one of the things that you're able to do, why I was so excited about this, is because you've got an incredible story. I've had the opportunity to work with you now for years. And just seeing that evolution and hearing about it even before my coming on scene has been to me, it's enlightening, it's motivating, and it's why I wanted to have you on the program here today.
I very much appreciate it because it has become my passion. When I think back now and realize the path that not only my life, but my professional career, my business career took, I mean, you could never have orchestrated that on your own. One, I believe in God's divine providence, but then also what happened in my involvement with Grandy Associates so long ago.
Absolutely. So before we jump into that, before we get into your story, we need to know a little bit about you because you've been in the plumbing industry for what, like 300 years?
dirt was invented the year before I started. Actually, my story starts all the way back in grade school. I never knew that I was a mechanical person. But then when I look back in retrospect, and that's the good thing about getting older is that hindsight, you've got that 20/20 vision, okay? But I was 8 years old and I put a basketball hoop up on my garage. Mm-hmm. The thought of that right now, knowing I have grandkids that are 5, 7, 13, 15, the thought about an 8-year-old putting up a backboard and a hoop on their garage, who does that? That's weird. And yet at the time I thought nothing of it. And as my life evolved, I used to fix and repair bicycles for neighborhood kids. And it got to the point where parents would come to me and say, here, Johnny Janie wants a 20-inch Stingray with the big, you know, 4-foot sissy bar and the ape hanger handlebars.
That takes you back.
Yeah, and it just, I thought nothing of building those and putting those together. Mm-hmm. So the mechanical ability was there. God gave that to me already, but I didn't know that. It was just like, hey, doesn't everybody do this? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting where things go.
Now, you really got into the trade still really early, didn't you? How did that come about?
So I ended up applying to a Milwaukee public high school, which was extremely unique. It was Boys Tech High School, Boys Technical and Trade High School. The emphasis of the school was one, it was only for guys, and it helped you specify, almost like you'd go to college and pick a major. Well, here you went to the school and you picked your major, but it was in the trades. It was heavily laden in the different technical trades. It didn't mean that you couldn't be prepared for a college education, but the whole point was is that what of the trades, the plumbing, the mechanicals, the machine shop, the electrical, what do you think you'd like to do? And the school was so terribly unique in the fact that the freshman year, you got a little bit of everything.
Okay.
They had what they called an exploratory shop program. You spent 4.5 weeks in each of the shops as a freshman. Little bit of sheet metal work, little bit of machine shop work, carpentry, automotive. We tore a Chev 350 engine down. It was great for these young boys, young men, to have a chance to try things. Mm-hmm. And then you picked your major.
Okay.
You selected your shop.
So really, by the time you're about a junior or a sophomore, you were already in high school, you're already picking your direction.
And I don't know why. That's the part that I still haven't figured out. There has been nobody in our family that was blue-collar trades-level worker. Cops, firemen, military personnel, civil servants, office, clerical, upper management. But getting your hands dirty, calloused in the actual trades, there hadn't been, and there still isn't. I'm the one that, for some reason, I know why I picked plumbing. And this is kind of weird. I often wondered why my thought process was like that. But I honestly thought as long as there's people, there's going to be a need for plumbing.
And we certainly found that out throughout the last year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just— are incredibly essential.
And the whole thing is that for me, it was like a logical decision. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? I love trades. I love all facets of it. Mm-hmm. What do I really like? What is my passion? And it's plumbing.
Sure. Awesome. Very good. So really, you came out of Boys Tech, right, already with a pretty solid knowledge of plumbing.
Yeah.
Right? And then you actually worked for a couple of other companies, if I remember correctly, right?
Exactly. One of the unique things that Boys Tech had was an agreement with a lot of the apprenticeship programs. The state of Wisconsin is unique is that all of our apprenticeship programs run through legislation. It is law, state statutes that require X amount of years for an apprenticeship, different categories. You graduated from Boys Tech at that time. You had a 2-year credit already on your plumbing apprenticeship.
Okay.
Just because you had gone through a 3-year program. Mm-hmm. And we're talking intense. We would spend half of our day, every day, in shop class.
And when you do, if I remember correctly, I mean, I was fascinated to know, again, in high school, you were actually plumbing houses, plumbing a building, plumbing, you were doing the work. There wasn't a whole lot of theory about it, was there?
I'm blown away in retrospect now, 40, 50 years later. But we had sewer connections coming through the wall in the basement, and there would be a sewer connection every 10 feet. These were live connections to the city of Milwaukee sewer system on 3rd Street. We would have a water service connection coming in. And the premise was is that you built a 3-story home by the time you graduated. So we came in off this sewer connection, and yes, we had to use blocking because we weren't breaking up the floor, but we actually put together the cast iron sewer system and then built it up through each floor. It's amazing when you think about that. Sophomore, junior, and senior boys, young men, physically putting cast iron, lead oakum joints together, cutting and threading water pipe, setting fixtures, hauling a water heater up. I mean, it's amazing when you think about that experience level.
Sure. And you got that right out of the gate, even before you went to school. Okay, so, and really, kind of just side note, our industry needs that again today, don't they?
In the worst way. And please, folks, this is me talking personally, but I've seen where 2 generations of young people have been told, you got to go to college, you have to get an education, you have to get a degree. I'm all in favor of that. God bless you if you get a chance to go to college and get a degree. But the thing is that, and as I explained earlier, we're wired differently. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is designed to go to college.
Right.
I have done certain classes. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing that's accredited towards a bachelor's degree of some sorts, but I am a master plumber. That is my master's license. That is my master's degree. I have earned that in every sense of the word. And the thing is that, you know, it's the school of hard knocks, as they say. But I had a chance to go and physically do not only something that I loved, something I was passionate about, but something that gave me a life skill that I could turn into money, the income. Because, hey, Bible says if you don't work, you don't eat. I needed to work. I needed to make money. I love to eat. So, I mean,
good tell. So, let me ask this question. Now, you know, you started out as a plumber, right? But when I met you, your company was Roska Plumbing and Heating.
Correct.
So, where does heating come into that?
Okay. Well, that's a good transition. So, let me back up if I can. So, 1981, we're hitting a recession. Gas prices are through the roof, gas shortages, et cetera. I had been working for a couple of different plumbing companies, and we finished a project, and all of us got our pink slips. And it wasn't because of us personally, though at the time, as a young man, it was a personal affront. Oh, it was like, what did I do wrong? I couldn't even tell my dad that I was laid off, because the concept of it is very foreign. 1975, I had six W-2 forms that year. Four of those jobs I held at one time. A full-time job, three part-time jobs. I didn't know what a workaholic was. I didn't understand the concepts of being an A-type choleric individual. But the thing is that I've been driven since day one. So in 1981, I'm out of work, but I've got a lot of accumulated hours, a lot of accumulated years of experience. Had the chance to write my master plumber's license. Wrote it, successfully finished it, and started W.J. Roska Plumbing Company, and started in the field that I knew, plumbing.
So how old were you at that point?
24.
24, and you started your company.
From what I was told, I was the youngest master in the state of Wisconsin at that time that had ever written a master.
Now, is that based on wisdom or just not knowing any better?
Yeah. I mean, it's reactionary. And it's like, yeah, what do you got to do? I mean, the fact that you're 24, okay, yeah, whatever.
Right? No question. All right. So take me through that then again. How you started out as, say, even there, right? W.J. Roska Plumbing.
Yeah, plumbing. And we later incorporated, so it became Roska Plumbing Corporation. And life is good. We're plodding along. We're going through a lot of bumps and grinds, and I did not know why. But you persevered. You shot through it. You know, we worked. We worked hard, worked long. And there were times that I'd be working all day out in the field, coming in at night, working on the trucks, working on paperwork, get done at midnight, get up the next morning and start all over again.
Do it again. Right.
And it was a very tough road of progression. And the unfortunate part is I didn't know what was happening to me or the company. But hey, A-type personality, you just plow on through and you keep pushing and working that much harder.
Problem solver, and you just do what you got to do to solve the problems, right?
Whatever it takes.
Somewhere in that point, right, you had a pretty major turning point. You had some rumbles, so you said you were working the long hours, a couple of challenging things going on. There was a particular thing that kind of happened at that point that was critical in the life of your company.
It was, Bill, and you need to build a little bit of the timeline of where I'm at. So 1981, I start the company. I basically started the company because I was out of work. Remember, I was laid off. I was laid off from the plumbing operation I worked for. I went and wrote my master's license, hung my shingle, as it were. But you're talking to a guy who is a very good technician, very good mechanic. Good mechanics do not necessarily make good businessmen.
Which is why we're here.
Which is why we're here, and which is where we're going to get. Folks, you need to hang on to this one. So I'm working long, long hours, busting butt, out in the field all day, wrenching, plumbing, coming in at night, doing paperwork, office work, fixing trucks, water pump, radiators, whatever needed to be done. You know, the guys would come in the next morning and the tooth fairy had arrived and everything was just done and taken care of. So, but you got me, dead man walking. All this while, I had a very close friend of mine, Paul Palchinski. Paul later, about 10 years later, started his own heating company.
Okay.
And again, good technicians do not necessarily make good business people.
They can.
They can.
But out of the gate, they don't.
But out of the gate, they normally don't. And if you do not have that technical ability, the managerial ability, and the entrepreneur end of it. If you don't have all three pieces of the puzzle, you got to find out. If you want to be in business for yourself, you have to get what you need to fill those pieces in. Mm-hmm. But hey, at this point in our lives, we don't know this. We don't understand this. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is work harder. Work harder. Work longer. You know, okay, there's only so much blood that can come out of your veins.
Right.
And when you're out of blood, what do you do? So long and short of it is that I'm working my plumbing company. Paul starts his own heating company. We're still best friends. One day, Paul comes to me. He said, Bill, I'm not making it. I love what I do. I thought Paul was a good manager, but truth be told, I could see where some of his entrepreneurial skills, but this is my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to offer help, but I'm not going to step in and burst his bubble. I was never going to approach him, but he approaches me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Bill, would you want to buy my company? I'll come run the heating division. I'm a plumber. My heating experience is very limited, okay?
I've heard some of your guys say that your experience in heating is that if it's too warm in the room, you turn the thermostat down.
Yeah, exactly, okay?
Okay.
and so the whole point was, as a plumber, I had no desire to be a heating contractor. As a business owner, the thought of becoming a heating contractor wasn't in my long-term game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And truth be told, I was having my own struggles. The company was making it, but they were making it off an unbelievable amount of sweat and energy and money. Rob Peter to pay Paul, borrow here to pay that, constant grind, constant struggle. But at the time, that's what I thought you had to do.
Right.
That's the only vision I saw.
Mm-hmm.
When Paul approached me and said, hey, buy my company and I'll run the heating division, the business side of me said the only way this was going to happen is if Paul was the manager. He needed to come in because I'm not going to be a heating guy.
Mm-hmm.
I still am. I am not a heating guy. Paul, if you run it, we're good to go.
And it made some sense, didn't it, in your market, right? Because you were located in the same market.
Yep.
Basically the same customers, same problems, same issues.
Exactly.
There's some synergies in working together.
Unbelievable. And Paul recognized that I had ability as a business entrepreneur. Yes, we struggled mightily, but there was still success within that, whereas Paul kept working harder and getting farther behind. And this is no disrespect, because if those of you that have ever had a chance to meet Paul, you would be fortunate knowing that you've met one of life's really good people.
Okay. So you're bringing the companies together.
And this
is a critical point in the life of Rosga.
This is a huge point. We're taking on a debt. I go to the bank and I say, I need X amount of six figures to buy this heating company. I had no background in heating. I had nothing to offer other than the collateral of the plumbing company.
And Paul's expertise.
Mm-hmm. So we buy Paul's company. I get Paul. I get all of his men, his equipment. Mm-hmm. And Rosga Plumbing and Heating Corporation is formed in 2000.
Okay.
Life is good. 2001, we all know, sadly, what happened at 9/11. And it didn't affect us business-wise. That was not the key turning point. But it's a benchmark. I do things in my life based around those key points. You know, 9/11 is one of them for a lot of us in our generation. What happened? So here we are. And the big thing that we were doing is that all this while, Paul's company and was Paul's division of Rosga Plumbing and Heating continued to work out of his own old original location.
Okay, so you're operating one company, two locations.
Two locations.
Really, two divisions.
Correct.
At two locations.
The only way we could do that was the fact that they were such separate entities. Mm-hmm. Plumbing and heating. Yes, there's a lot that the two divisions have in common,
mm-hmm.
but the operations are completely different.
Right.
The heating trucks are set up differently. The plumbing trucks are set up differently. So we used to call it Rosga West and Rosga East.
Okay.
But it became very clear and very evident that at some point, as we grew, as things got bigger, stronger, communication, to bring these two companies under the same roof.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a building that was large enough to do that. We had to make some adaptations, mm-hmm. make some changes.
But it would accommodate it.
It would accommodate it. And so early in 2002, we made the concerted effort to bring Paul in-house, bring us all under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great.
Okay. So now you're in one building.
Now we're in one building. Life is good. And it's June we're ready to hit the busy season.
Then
you're going to ask me the question.
What's next?
So, Paul takes 1 week off, comes back to work the second week of July, and we're working a very nice project on the lakefront of Milwaukee, a nice home. I stick my head in his office. Hey, what are you doing today? Well, I got to go measure up a chimney cap. So I said, good enough. I'll see you around 2 o'clock. And I got a call from Sam, my head plumbing manager. Paul's fallen. He said, flight for life, picked him up at the local playground. The ambulance took him off the job, took him to the playground. Flight for life took him to the hospital. You got to understand, Paul was my best friend. Paul was the manager of my heating division. Paul was whom I'm relying on mm-hmm. to pay back a very large debt to the bank. And now you're telling me that he's being flown for his own life to the hospital. I call his wife, talking to Joanne, telling her what's happened. We meet at the Frederick Hospital that afternoon, and the doctors very quickly inform us that he will not live.
Mm.
It evidently he had suffered a stroke, and the stroke would not have normally killed him. But the fact that when you have a stroke, you're incapacitated, and he went headfirst into the concrete.
Now, anybody who's a business owner listening to this, if you've had that scenario where you've had an employee that's been injured, I mean, that in itself is, I mean, there is no business owner that goes through that doesn't hurt as if it was one of their own children, right? And this is, you know, he's losing his life.
Bill, you just said something that is very key. If you are a business owner, if you have invested in your company in any degree, yes, each and every one of these people become your children,
mm-hmm.
all right? You think about them, you pray about them, you see them get married, you see mm-hmm. them have kids, you're part of weddings and baptisms and a couple of funerals, parents and whatnot. But now this was also my best friend. This was a guy that I had known by this point for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Paul was my best friend, and I have to deal with this on multiple levels. One, I'm dealing with my best friend. I'm dealing with my best friend's wife. I'm dealing with OSHA. Mm-hmm. OSHA was there within hours.
Sure.
I'm dealing with the police, paramedics, the first responders, answering questions, mm-hmm. interviews.
All right, so I'm going to take you out from the middle of that
thank
struggle,
you.
Right?
Thank,
because
thank
I can
you.
Hear that
thank
in
you.
Your voice.
Yeah.
It is okay. So then we come to the next business day.
Yeah.
Right now, knowing the background you've already shared with us, and you're relying on Paul to run this part of the company.
So I'm in the office. First off, when I talked about OSHA, they sent us over that afternoon. Within the next 48 hours, we want 2 pages worth of documentation. Mm-hmm. The very next day, Paul is still alive, but he's being kept alive just for the sake of organ mm-hmm. donation. The very next day, 2 OSHA officers show up in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
We know we told you 48 hours, but here, we want to see what you have. You're legally, as a business owner, responsible. One, there's the accountability. One, there was an accident. Yes, there was a death, impending death. And you've got all of this to deal with. My heart, my emotions are dealing with Paul. I'm dealing with Joanne. I'm dealing with the doctors. How do we deal with this? I'm dealing with my employees. And then, oh, by the way, there's a company to run.
Mm-hmm.
There's plumbing jobs.
It's
there's
still going,
heating jobs. The job that we were on is, was an active job. OSHA's there. They want answers. I've got jobs going. I've got payroll to make that week.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 5 guys from the heating division with, okay, Bill, what now?
Mm, right. Yeah, because it's really that, okay, now new boss, right? Because they were still Paul's crew. Right?
Paul's crew, Paul's company. We had a very unique relationship. The only reason I acquired the heating company is because of Paul.
Sure.
I needed that level of trust in a person that I knew would have the best interests of me, mm-hmm. my company, mm-hmm. and the plurality of the joint companies now.
And really, let me ask you this, because you said for a year that you were really operating as 2 separate companies.
Exactly.
And you had just brought them in.
A week.
So my guess is the team still didn't really feel as one.
there were so many dynamics in place. The hardest part was we had not unpacked. When I told you we moved in one day, that was the physical structure, the presses, the brakes, the sheet metal, all of that stuff. But Paul had boxes and boxes of paperwork.
All that stuff that you typically have in your office, imagine and, moving.
And right? This had not been entered into our computer system. So whereas today, everything is done digitally. Mm-hmm. Everything is done electronically. Back then, it was three-part carbonless forms.
Sure.
In file folders. And we had boxes of this.
So how did you even get through, I mean, just in terms of process, if you will, how did you, were the things that you did just to try and survive, right? And to, you know, from a process business standpoint?
From a process business standpoint, you folks got to understand, and the dynamic that's different was Paul being my best friend. So I'm dealing with the emotions that went along with it. You cry in private when you can, mm-hmm. and then you wipe your tears and you start digging through boxes because the phone doesn't stop ringing.
Right.
If anything, you've garnered a little bit more attention than you were mm-hmm. looking for. It's one thing when you turn on the 5 o'clock news and they show a Flight for Life helicopter and you realize that's my friend. Mm-hmm. So from that aspect, the company still has to keep going. By this time, we're probably about 20, 25 people mm-hmm. between office and technical people. Okay. So the company had already grown. We had already gone through some growing pains, some of them that I did not know about till later. But the whole point was is that we had jobs in progress. And the hard part was is that everything was within Paul's ability, within Paul's brain, as you could say. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I mean, the brain right now is what I didn't have. I'm lost. I am totally lost. I have to figure out where are we at.
And so everything you're doing is digging through boxes, looking for information, right?
Crazy.
And it's,
just,
it's pure triage, isn't it?
It's pure triage.
Now, this really starts the dare I call it the healing process, in more than one way, right? Yeah. So at some point, you started working with Grandy & Associates. How did that come about?
you would wonder, and folks, it's unfortunate that too many times it takes a catastrophic event mm-hmm. to finally push us or prod us or tell
our
us
attention.
Just this is what you gotta do. Mm-hmm. We were dying. What was happening in a slow, steady process of struggle, but making it, was now accelerated big time. First off, I was losing money, hemorrhaging money. I told my wife, if we get everything squared away by the end of the year, we'll be in good shape. We didn't have things squared away for several years. The amount of money that I feel that we lost was in excess of $1 million over the course of the next few years. So the company was struggling. We were in the toilet bowl. Somebody had flushed the handle. The swirl was already going. It wasn't going to...
Spoken like a true flyer.
Yeah, it wasn't going to take a lot to realize that we were in trouble. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking 2003, spring of 2003. PHCC, they were having a spring conference. And one of the presenters was Mr. Tom Grandy of Grandy & Associates. So I'm reading the article and reading it, and his whole mantra was, we're going to help contractors run profitable business. Okay, that's got my attention a little bit. We're going to show you how to examine your numbers, how to look for the deficiencies within your company. So my wife and I, on a last minute, hey, let's try something, sign up for the PHCC convention, attend this class. This class was abbreviated, 2 to 4 hours tops. And it was just enough to wet your whistle. And Tom Grandy, his first presentation, he says, the hardest part for a company in their business life is when they break $1 million. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yeah, because it took me years to get through that. And he was like saying things that were very, okay.
He was reading your mail, wasn't he?
I'm tracking this, buddy. keep talking. And we very quickly realized we needed to sign up for the full-blown course and program. And if any of you have ever had a chance to meet Tom Grandy, to work with him, you would realize that you have a very genuine human being. Mm-hmm. He was not trying to sell me anything. Okay, he was not trying to say, well, if you sign up now by 10 o'clock, we're going to include, you know, the pot and the pan and the kitchen mm-hmm. sink. No, this guy really cared about contractors. Mm-hmm. And he had put together a program that in his mind's eye, and I can only wholeheartedly agree with, thought this is what you needed to do in order to run a profitable company. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I said, okay, where's your next class as soon as possible? And it was April of 2003, little part of Kentucky called Owensboro, Kentucky. Didn't even know where it was. Had to look it up.
The world's largest sassafras tree, right?
Exactly. We signed up for a Grandy. Back then, he called it Basic Business Boot Camp. Mm-hmm. And it was a intense three-day boot camp.
Yep. So you're in Owensboro, right, and going through that program. When you left... what do you remember what your big takeaways were the first time you went through that program?
The biggest thing, now you got to remember, we're a company that's already had 20 years of history. Mm-hmm. So unlike a lot of the companies that were there, when my wife and I brought our financials, because Tom insisted that you brought P&L statements, tax returns, important data that you should have. We had ledger sheets that were pages long. One of the first exercises that Tom had you do, the software that Grandy and Associates uses, it blows my mind to this day, and I consider myself technical, but he had us data enter in the software all of the trucks, how old they were, replacement cost, equipment cost, enter in all of the critical data that you needed, how much your overhead was, fixed or variable, expected income, profits, et cetera. Mm-hmm. All of this data was inputted into this program, and then you hit a button, and boom, it would spit out what you needed to know. Mm-hmm. The thing that was the biggest takeaway was there was not a lot of things that were necessarily surprising, but there was a whole plethora of things that we weren't doing.
Mm, okay.
We already busted through the $1 million mark. And we were well on our way to the $2.5 million, which was the next big hurdle
next
you had to get through. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, having someone like Tom explain to us why that was such a problem. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a problem. I lived it for 3 years. 900,000, 950,000, bam, bam, bam. Why can't we break $1 million? What is going on?
Yeah.
Tom explained it, and it was like,
the light bulb comes on. When you understand that part of it. Now, a lot of these little things, right? Because I'm asked all the time, what's the silver bullet to profitability, right? And my response is always the same. There is no silver bullet. There's a bunch of little tiny BBs.
Oh yeah.
Right? There's all these little things that you have to do. And when you add them together, suddenly profitability comes out.
And your business, when you talk about all these little BBs, mm-hmm. every business has got different BBs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
Different bullets. Mm-hmm. For us, there's certain things that are, yes, common to all businesses, whether you're a contractor, whether you're in the retail end of it, there are certain things that are common, but you yourself have different strengths and weaknesses mm-hmm. that you bring to the table. So the neat thing about the basic business boot camp was how it exposed all of that. Mm-hmm. And the software that you guys run, once you load that in accurately and you hit the button, the answers are the answers. Mm-hmm. The computer, it's mathematics. There is no mm-hmm. there's no human element in it, like, no.
It pulls a subjectivity out, doesn't it?
And
so that's one of the things that, you know, we look at. And also, the first time you go through it, it's a bit like drinking from a fire hydrant, right? That's why we feel it's so important that you bring your numbers to that workshop, right? It was basic business boot camp back then. Today, it's the Planning for Profit workshop. But it's why it's so important that you bring your numbers to it, because theory doesn't matter. Right? You have to apply it to your company in your situation.
And you bring your honest numbers, mm-hmm. okay? This is not fuzzy math, okay? The bottom line is, how much did you do last year? That is a physical number.
Right.
Okay. What did you report to the IRS? What should have you reported to the IRS? Okay. what did you pay? If any company, especially now when you have software like QuickBooks, Quicken, Peachtree, I don't know if that how big mm-hmm. a player that is, but some of the software is so easy to use, but it is strictly accounting software. Mm-hmm. It only allows you to track and enter in. So I get my expense report for my fuel for trucks this month, and we spent how many thousands of dollars? That's a number you plug in. That's a real expense. By taking these numbers and plugging it into the software, mm-hmm. and then plugging in the results of what you actually had, you can start to analyze this. My wife and I spent that first night, we were up till midnight. Tom let us use his office. I mean, the rest of the hotel was shut down and quiet. My wife and I had pages upon pages, because remember, we were not a startup company. The sooner a company, in my opinion, the sooner a company can get into a planning for profit class, mm-hmm. the better your life's going to be.
Sure.
You're going to skip 20 years of anguish and heartache and hurt. So we're plugging in numbers because the next day, Tom's going to get us to push that magic enter button and start spitting out data. Mm-hmm. And that was like mind-blowing, okay? But it answered a whole lot of questions. The biggest thing for me was the satisfaction of knowing why, you know, because it's one thing to do it. It's one thing to get through that, but why did that happen? Mm-hmm. Okay,
you're that talking was, the profit plateau. Why yeah. did that? Why were you hitting that wall?
Okay, all parts of that.
Sure. So let me ask you this. Now you came back a second time,
and a third, and a fourth,
and a fourth.
Yeah. Right?
So yeah, my question is this: is why did you feel you needed to come back? Even that second time, why did you feel you needed to come back?
Education is repetitive. Mm-hmm. You hear something, you might forget it. You see something, you're going to at least remember it. But it's not until you do something that you really understand.
Sure.
Now we had gone to our first basic business boot camp, now called Planning for Profit. And the company is starting to right itself. We're starting to get things squared away. We were grossly undercharging for our services. Please remember, it's not about charging more because you make more and it means you're going to buy a new car. It's talking about charging more because you need to charge more, mm-hmm. because you got to pay your bills, because you have to pay your men and your women. You want to offer them living wages. You want to offer them benefit programs. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, that truck will not last forever. And when it comes to the end of that truck, you need to have the provisions, the plan in place to replace it.
How are you going to pay for it?
So we, as the company grew and continued to develop, we had hired a new heating manager, and it was a struggle. It was a big struggle, but we kept working through it. But then the desire to bring the rest of our team on board. The next Planning for Profit workshop was actually done then with you. It's when I first met you.
Yeah.
And for me, real stubborn, stuck in my ways, I wanted Tom Grandy. I wanted his class. Tom said, "You're going to really like this guy named Bill Kennard."
He didn't want to come to a class with me.
I didn't. I want to come to him. No, because Tom is my answer, man. Tom was going to give us, you know, that was nirvana. We ended up doing a class with Bill Kennard. And, you know, I wish I wasn't so stubborn. I wish I understood. When Tom said I would really like Bill Kennard, that was an understatement. Because besides my respect for Bill as a technician, as a trainer, as a teacher, is surpassed by my friendship, the man that I respect as a human being. And folks, when it comes to it, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters,
right.
as human beings. So, but what I did is I ended up bringing my team together, the plumbing manager, the heating manager, myself. We also have a sewer and water division. And I can't remember, sewer and water might have come on the third trip.
I think so.
Because then we also brought the office manager. Mm-hmm. Because the neat thing about the software program is you can create little companies within the companies. And that's exactly what we did. Anna had her laptop and software of Planning for Profit. Steve from Sewer and Water had his laptop, his financial numbers. Sam had the plumbing numbers. And John and Ben had the HVAC numbers.
And that was a little bit unique approach. There's not a lot of companies who have taken it to the level that you have,
yeah.
right? Because there were most companies, I'm modeling my company, and yes, I've got individual departments. You actually took it to the point of you broke out your individual overhead, right?
Yes.
So Anna, who's your office manager at that point, basically went through and assigned the overhead for each individual division in
Correct.
Your company. And then you had each manager modeled their department, their division, as a standalone company. And they had, I remember you telling me, guys, you need to be profitable in your own right. You can't depend on the revenues coming in from another department to float your boat.
And it's not that that doesn't happen in real life, but unless you can actually see, take Steve from Sewer and Water. He had tremendous overhead, excavators, dump trucks, front-end loaders, skid loaders, very high of both fixed and variable costs. So what did he need to do to cover those costs and make him a standalone profitable division? What did heating have to do? What did plumbing have to do? So me, as the owner, as the overseer, just kind of, you know, gently guiding each of these divisions along. Anna, poor gal, she had a $600,000 negative overhead because she produced zero income. In fact, when we sat down and shared these numbers with everybody, I think her total income was like $110 for the year.
And so in your company, again, Anna's department was really, you looked at the administrative staff as a separate department.
Right.
Whereas in planning for profit, we don't do that. Right, the administrative staff is there to support one of my departments, and so you struggled with that a little bit. How do I split that and move those dollars into departments? But you did it well.
Well, but we needed to first know what we were up against, and when it stood alone, it made a whole lot more sense than when we melded it into a general, you know, P&L statement.
Sure.
So when Anna saw what the company had for actual costs, expenses, and how that played a part, we then started dissecting to what part belonged to what division. Because very overhead heavy was plumbing and heating, more so than sewer and water. And yet sewer and water had the greatest expense for business insurance and trucks and that. They didn't need the office. They they ran themselves.
And your typical sewer and water job was one day or multiple days, whereas the plumbing and heating, many times, especially on the service side, was 5 and 6 and 7 calls a day.
20 to 30 calls a day
per tech.
You're right. But the and that was the difference. So the plumbing and heating had a tremendous amount of overhead.
Now, one of the things that I saw that I thought was really satisfying from an instructor standpoint is you were sitting there, right? And so Bill's got, you got a picture of this in the classroom, right? Typically it's one company per table. Well, Bill's got the entire back row of the room, right? And he's got each of his division leaders modeling their own company. Now, one of the things that, what I saw was Bill Rozga training five different leaders at the same time. And you were growing other leaders within your company. Because you made them responsible. You made them, part of their accountability was to understand the financial side of their division and how do we make it profitable.
Bill brings up a good point because I have always run my company from a, not so much a different standpoint, but from a point that I believe is why I got into business. I got into business originally because I was out of work and I needed a job and I needed income. But then later on, you start to realize you are affecting the lives of human beings.
Yeah.
I had Sam, the general manager, came to me at age 18, wrote me a letter. In fact, he wrote about 30 letters. He told me later, only three people responded. And he just said, I want to be a plumber. Okay, I'm willing to train you to be a plumber. After 20 years, 30 years, you start to realize these are human beings. And nothing has given me greater pleasure than to see these men and women develop in who they became. I have been to more weddings, baptisms amongst my own people.
Sure.
That is great.
Oh, isn't it?
You get a company party, a summer picnic, a year-end celebration.
And as a business leader, you not only have the ability, but you've got the responsibility. Right. Of I mean, what you do is impacting not only the life of your family, but it's impacting the lives of the families of every single person that works for your company. And that's a lot on the shoulders, isn't it?
It's a lot on your shoulders. But I'll tell you, folks, for me, that's living.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, if it was just about the money, if it was just about business, I would have handled things differently. And maybe I'd have more money right now at this point in my life. But trust me, folks, more money right now doesn't do a thing for me.
Right.
Okay. Knowing that Steve got married, now they have two children, and that me, my company, our group have supported that. have allowed that to happen, that young people have come, started right out of high school, learned a trade, learned an occupation, and now are making very good money. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of Sam, Steve, they're running their own divisions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, how did Sam do? 30 letters, you gave him a chance. Sam's a rock star, isn't he?
Sam is a rock star. And funny thing was, he came to work for me, and about 4 months later, he quit.
You must have been hard to work for.
I'm very hard to work for. Don't forget, I'm an A-type choleric, high D. Go, go, go. You pound, you pound, you pound. 3 hound dogs are dead. You still keep running through the woods because there's one more fox to get. And Sam was enticed by a friend of his to come and work for him. About a week and a half later, Sam called me up and he said, Bill, can we talk? Yeah, sure. He burned no bridges. I was disappointed that he left. But he shared with me his story, and he, as a young man, realized it's not so green on the other side. It's not all that is thought or presented. Mm-hmm. He came back to me a much more mature young man. And
after a short period of time.
Very short period of time. Right. And Sam was growing up. I worked him to death, as I have a lot of my people. Because if you want to learn, you have to learn all aspects of it. You have to learn the ugly side of it, the mud, the ditch digging, the fecal matter on your boots, the unpleasantries of it, all the way up through the polish, the fixtures, the customer relations, the schmoozing at a convention possibly, mm-hmm. All aspects of it. And Sam was a very key part in that entire growth.
Now, you say that you work them to death, but I know Bill Rosman, right? You work them to death with a high level of respect, right,
yeah.
and compassion, right, and everything else was likely in there as well, I would assume.
You are still dealing with men and women.
Absolutely.
You are still dealing with people mm-hmm. who have a heart, who have a spirit, who have a mind. Mm-hmm. You do not ever want to break someone's spirit. Right. You can physically work someone without breaking their spirit. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say that I've always handled every situation well. Anybody that's worked for me has seen me on one of my tirades. But the thing that I would like to have always believed is that when it was done, okay, Bill, I'm sorry, I lost my temper, I cut your head off. I want the accountability that I can at least say either I'm wrong or I should have done it differently. Mm-hmm. I should have presented it to you differently. It's hard. It's very hard. And to be a human being and be in business, those two worlds can really have a collision.
All right. So let's, now just 2 or 3 years ago, you had another pretty major shift, didn't you?
Big major shift. Okay. So remember Sam? We're talking about Sam?
Yeah, Sam the rock star. Yeah, he worked into that, yeah.
Sam was a young man who was married, likes to race cars, likes to build cars, going along, had his own life. Mm-hmm. But then one day, he came to me and he said, Bill, would you ever think about selling the company? Where is this coming from? Okay, my little Sam was growing up. Mm-hmm. He was maturing. By this time, he'd been with me for 26 years.
Yeah, so he knew everything about the company.
He
was your right hand, right?
Yeah, by this time, he's general manager. Mm-hmm. He is actually, I moved him into my office a few years before that. Mm-hmm. I purposely took an office in the back of the shop. I did not need to be front and center. Mm-hmm. First off, my nature is hands-on. I would rather go out with the construction crew or the plumbing crew and get dirty. Sam was very, very good at dealing with the customers, very good at dealing with the employees. Mm-hmm. All those parts of the interpersonal relationship that a guy like me is a little bit of old school, okay? Remember I could snap off your head? Mm-hmm. Okay, you can't always get away with that as the first approach.
And one of the other things that, so I'm going to come back at you, right, just real quickly, is that... for a lot of business leaders, this is my company, it's my baby, yeah. Right? I've grown this thing, I'll make the decision, right? You intentionally took a step back. You were intentionally, right, whether you knew it or not,
yep.
Again, growing your replacement.
Growing my replacement did not mean ownership.
Right.
Okay, but a capable person. First off, for those of you that are business owners out there, you need to get the key people in the key places. Mm-hmm. We cannot. It was never intended to go it alone. If you're running a one- or two-man shop, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. If you're able to be the great technician, the great manager, and the business entrepreneur with those leadership visionary skills, great, God bless you. The man or woman that can do all three, that's great, okay? Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I had abilities in all of them, but you put the right people in the right place. Wasn't it Collins' book that talked about...
Jim Collins talks about getting the right people on the right seat on the bus.
And sometimes those people move. I brought people in, put them in positions, and all of a sudden, that's not right. Mm-hmm. And you sometimes have to make some really hard decisions and move people either to a different place on the bus or off the bus.
Right.
I've never been able to let someone go easily. Mm-hmm. It may be a business fault of mine that I've held on to some people too long. Mm-hmm. But I'll stand before God and give an account for that. The thing is that the putting Sam in position of leadership, I put myself in an office and back in the shop. Sam was front and center. He even asked me, are you okay with this? Sam, that's great. Mm-hmm. You're general manager. You're a key point here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is before any talk about ownership came into play.
Okay, so he came and ultimately Sam bought the business from you.
Sam came to us in 2017, asked us if we had thought about it. And truthfully, I was at a point in my life, I'll be 65 this year. So I was, 62 when we sold the company? But if you got a guy like me who is used to working 80 hours a week, at age 62, I was already, okay, I was 62, but my body was feeling like 82.
Mm-hmm.
Do as much as you can, work as hard as you can, but at some point, you start running out of gas. And it was a good point in my life for my wife and I.
Sure.
Totally unexpected.
And it's the difference between doing it because you love doing it and doing it because you have to do it.
Exactly. And so we sat down and thought long and hard about it, and we made it happen for Sam. Mm-hmm. And January 3rd of 2018, we signed over the company to him. For our customers, for the employees, did not know a single different.
Which was part of the blessing of having Sam in that general manager position and
exactly.
really yeah. running the show.
I mean, that was just another page. We went from January 2nd to January 3rd. The company name, the company phone number, the trucks, the equipment, the people, the process, everything. I simply stepped aside.
Mm-hmm.
That full year, 2018, I was quite involved, finishing up jobs, projects, contracts.
Consulting,
helping, even to this day.
So let me do this. We're coming to the end of our time. My question for you is this. Is there any advice that you would have for somebody coming in, either coming into this business or somebody who's running their business today and is feeling that struggle, that pull that you've got?
This is not an infomercial, okay? This is from my heart. Taking Tom Grandy's original class, Basic Business Bootcamp, or today working with Tom and Bill on Planning for Profit, saved my life from a business standpoint. If we had not taken that class, by the end of 2006, we'd be gone, be dead. You can only do so much.
Right.
You can only physically move so much material, inventory, work. My body, my brain, my heart was gone. I was a great technician. I consider myself a great technician, but that's not the answer.
Right.
That business side of it has to be the component in there. The fact that there's a company like yours out there doing what you do, and now that you've expanded it to the training videos and that, it blows my mind because these are the resources that we have available to us.
Sure.
And for a contractor to not do this, put it this way, I got done with the first class and I told my wife, I would have spent $10,000 for that class. Knowing what I know now, knowing what that class has done for me, $20,000, $30,000, $100,000, when it saves your life from a business standpoint, when it allows you to build up the equity that you can sell your company and live off of the proceeds, how much is this class worth? You want $100,000 for it? Okay.
I'll send you an invoice. great. Well, you know, that's awesome. Now, just one last quick question, right? So we've been blessed not only to know each other, right, but after you sold your company, right, I know Bill Rozga enough to know that he's not going to sit at home and twiddle his thumbs and read the newspaper. So
that first year was hard. No. That first year was excruciatingly difficult.
So what you've actually blessed Grandy and Associates back. And so what's one of the things you're doing today?
So I've always done career fairs, gone to the schools to talk and train to people. But then a very, very good friend of mine named Bill Kennard, he approached me and said, what would you think about doing some training? And training has been the core of my being. Mm-hmm. I love doing what I do, but I want to do it for a purpose.
So the program you're doing today for us is?
It is a plumbing onboarding class. We call it plumbing onboarding. It's a 101 level. The biggest thing there is to allow companies. So picture this. Remember I was telling you about how many kids are going to school, to mm-hmm. colleges, technical colleges, learning, getting their degree. That's fine and dandy. But while that emphasis was great in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, we lost two generations mm-hmm. of tradespeople.
Right.
We have an unbelievable shortage right now. We're talking 250,000 plumbers needed, mm-hmm. heating, electrical, carpentry. Yep. We have taken a couple of generations of people and have taken them out of the labor force from the trade standpoint. So companies now are starting to realize, I need bodies. They are bringing in young people mm-hmm. out of high school, out of college, that have no background in plumbing or HVAC. Mm-hmm. The program that we have developed allows a company, we're talking a supply house, a contractor, a related trade field personnel, to have their employees, their students, whomever, it's open to anybody that wants to take the class, but they log in with me for a two-day experience. I want people to log into my class and say, hey, what is it about sewers? People don't even know what's underground. They mm-hmm. flush the toilet and it just magically goes somewhere, mm-hmm. okay? Now we know where it goes, why it goes, and so we cover pretty much a historical A to Z background. It's not designed to make you an apprentice plumber, certainly not a journeyman plumber. It's that conversational knowledge mm-hmm. that gets you the experience so you say, you know, now I know what they're talking about.
What's the difference between a vent and a stack and the traps and what they do? And
why they need to be a difference between it. Why do you call a building sewer or building drain? It's still the place where the poop goes. Well, there's a big reason for calling it. There's mm-hmm. a legal responsibility, a liability in it. I've had CSR, customer service reps, guys and gals that are just answering the phone for a company. But now when they're talking to that customer, I know what Bill talked about that. My water stinks. Why does it smell? Well, ma'am, is it the magnesium rod in your water heater? Is it your water? Is it sulfur? Mm-hmm. These are the things we touch on. And it's designed to give you that conversational knowledge, the best way to put it. Just that rough background to get you off the ground mm-hmm. and running.
And it is an awesome program. So if you've got people that you want to give that conversational knowledge to, Master Plumber, Mr. Rozga is the guy to do it.
Be more than glad to have you. I'll tell you, it's just, and that's the thing that, again, the way I'm wired, the way I am made up, I love it when I interact with people. Mm-hmm. People will chat in, they'll unmute their mics and talk to me.
It's very much a two-way conversation throughout, isn't it?
It has to be. It has to be, that's because right. you don't want to just sit there and turn on a screen and watch this guy talk
right.
with about 500 PowerPoint slides. Mm-hmm. We need to interact. We need to communicate.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, can you believe how fast this time has gone?
Crazy. And, and the thing is, I could talk about this. I could talk about me.
I know you could. Well, it's been an honor to have been a part of, played a little part in Rozga Plumbing and Heating, and where that company has gone. It's an honor to call you a friend.
And I feel the same way.
Bill, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, brother.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com
or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Prophet University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.